Welcome everyone. This is a ordination ceremony for Judy Cosgrove. Koji is sort of in the ordination zone these days. It feels kind of like maybe like there's a certain time of the year when there's weddings. I think it's usually May, isn't it? But this seems to be our season for ordinations. This is our third ordination in a very short time. So very appropriate that it be ordained now. A little bit about what ordination means. The word ordination is a somewhat borrowed term from Christianity. A better term might be simply returning, simply coming back home. The receiving of the precepts is an expression of coming back home to one's true nature, one's true self. And it's also remembering that you're interconnected with all beings and all things, without exception, and that you have a intimate connection to a teaching thread, in this case, the thread of Kōbun Jinō Otagawa Roshi. A kind of gift to come back home. There are three basic understandings or expressions of the Buddha way. In Zen, we think of meditation being just what we do, but it's a threefold practice. Sangaku, it's three learnings, three ways that come together. And meditation also includes the other two, which is wisdom or understanding, and precepts or ethical behavior, ethical expressions of how we live in the world and how we relate to one another. And each of those three ways or three expressions of the way embody the other two. So within meditation, there is ethical expression of life, and there is understanding or wisdom. And within wisdom, there is the practice of meditation, of reflection, of coming back, and also of how we conduct ourselves in the world and how we express ourselves. So you're going to hear from Judy a promise, a pledge, or a choice of how to be in the world. Now, just like when someone gets married, they're already in love with the person. They already know the person they're with. And the ceremony actually expresses what's already going on. In this instance, too, the promise or the avowal is actually expressing what is already functioning. The precepts are expressed in some ways like a promise not to kill or not to lie. But they're also expressed in a broader way, which Judy will read, and that's that. This is actually the way things are. That there is no false words. There is no killing. There is one life that is totally unkillable. So in looking at that one life that's unkillable, we avow, we promise to take care of and to nourish life. So these precepts will be read in different ways, and in each different way, they'll express a promise, they'll express a broad view, and they'll express an interconnection with all things, of a kind of nurturing or a positive way of meeting ourselves and meeting others and meeting the world. So we begin the ceremony with some bows. So Judy will do, if you could stand up and remove your cushion. And and first you'll do, if you could, you'll do three bows to the lineage and to the teachers of the lineage. So actually it comes, in this instance, it'll come through me. So these are expressions of connecting with all the Buddhas and all the ancestors and all the lineage, and particularly in Judy's case with her core teacher, which is Koban Chino Dagao Roshi. How's it bowing? Okay. The next three bows will be in the direction of her ancestors, in the direction where your parents were buried, or where their burial site is. So if you can imagine that from here. And in this instance, Judy is saying, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Get out of the way. Is saying thank you and remembering all her ancestors, her parents, their parents, many, many people. We could say even before people. And now three more bows, and it's a bow to all beings. So basically you'll be doing one bow in this direction, maybe one bow in that direction, maybe one bow in that direction. You'll be bowing to Sangha, but you'll be bowing to all beings. And you can put your hands in Gassho and bow with her. Before receiving the precepts, as Angie said the other day, we say, or we remember our many mistakes, the great trouble we've made in this world, all the harm we've caused, all our selfishness, we confess. It's called Sangeman, or repentance. So we begin this way before the precepts to say, I'm sorry. These are three translations, so you can just read this out.
Da shaku shozo sho aku go kaiyu mushi tong jin shi ju shen ku i shi sho sho yi sai ga kun kai sange. All this continuing twisted karma and endless production, attaching, averting, and ignoring. Inactivity in communication, in thought, now I fully acknowledge it. All my ancient wrong actions from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born of body, speech, and mind, now I fully avow.
The precepts has three parts. The first part is a return or a taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Buddha is an expression of one's awakened existence. Dharma is an expression of one's awakened understanding. And Sangha is an expression of the interconnection of all beings and all things. So it starts out returning to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That's the first set that Judy will read. And then there's what's called the broad precepts or the pure precepts. And these are very big or general views, sustaining right conduct, sustaining the good, sustaining all beings. And this sets a kind of big vow to be wholesome, to be good, and to help others. And following that, there's three readings of the 10 precepts, and the 10 precepts are more specific, having to do with specific activities and ways of behavior and how we relate to other beings and things. So, Judy, the first reading of the 10 full precepts are on this paper, and then there's two more. The second one is from the clear mind precepts, the positive precepts, and then we'll finish with reading Koban's translations of the 10 precepts. And that, there's a preface that says, from this body, so on, so on.
From this present body through to the awakened body of all beings, vowing to return to Buddha, return to Dharma, return to Sangha, return to Buddha, return to Dharma, return to Sangha, return to Buddha completely, return to Dharma completely, return to Sangha completely. From this present body through to the awakened body of all beings, vowing to embrace and sustain right conduct, embrace and sustain every good, embrace and sustain all beings, embrace and sustain right conduct, embrace and sustain every good, embrace and sustain all beings, embrace and sustain right conduct, embrace and sustain every good, embrace and sustain all beings. From this present body through to the awakened body of all beings, vowing first, no killing life. Second, no stealing. Third, no attaching to fulfillment. Fourth, no illusory words. Fifth, no selling the wine of delusion. Sixth, no dwelling on past mistakes. Seventh, no praise or blame. 8. No hoarding materials or teaching. 9. No being angry. 10. No abusing the three treasures.
And these are called the clear mind precepts. So those last 10 precepts are stated differently.
In no killing life, I vow to nourish and encourage life. In no stealing, I vow to honor all gifts, those given and those not yet given. In no attachment to fulfillment, I vow to remain faithful in relationships. In no illusory words, I vow to communicate truth. In no selling the wine of delusion, I vow to polish clarity and dispel delusion. In no dwelling on past mistakes, I vow to create wisdom even from ignorance. In no praise, no blame, I vow to cultivate modesty in self and others, with nothing above and nothing below. In no hoarding materials or teachings, I vow to share understanding, freely giving of self. In no being angry, I vow to release bias and dwell in equanimity. In no harming the three treasures, I vow to respect Buddha, unfold Dharma, and nourish the Sangha.
And finally, Koban Shino Roshi's translation of Bodhidharma's 10 precepts, the same 10 precepts.
To receive is to transmit. To transmit is to be awakened. Thus, to be awakened in Buddha mind is called true receiving precepts. First, no killing life. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. In the midst of eternal Dharma, not to give rise to the view of stopping and extinction is called no killing life precept. Second, no stealing. Self-nature is mysteriously profound, unattainable Dharma. Not to raise mind of attainable is a called no stealing or robbing. Third, no attaching to fulfillment. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. Truth of no attachment, not to give birth of attaching, loving, is called no desiring. Fu in yoku, no wrong, no scattered desiring. Fourth, no illusory words. Self-nature is mysteriously profound, unexplainable Dharma. Not to preach one word is called no illusory words. Fifth, no selling the wine of delusion. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. Truth of original basic purity. Not to give birth of ignorance is called no selling wine, no drinking wine. Sixth, no dwelling on past mistakes. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. In the midst of unmistakable truth, not to speak of past mistakes is called the precept of no speaking of past mistakes. Seventh, no praise or blame. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. In the midst of equality, in the midst of identical Dharma, identity of truth, no speaking of self and others is called no praise or blame, precept of no praise or blame. Eighth, no hoarding materials or teachings. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. In the midst of all-pervading truth, not to raise hoarding, attaching on one form or on any single form is called no hoarding precept. Ninth, no being angry. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. In the midst of selfless truth, truth of selflessness, no measuring of oneself is called no being angry, precept of no being angry. Tenth, no abusing the three treasures. Self-nature is mysteriously profound. In the midst of one Dharma, in the midst of one great truth, not to give rise of mind of sentient being or Buddha being is called no abusing the three treasures.
You have now read Buddha's precepts. Do you receive Buddha's precepts?
I do.
Do you receive Buddha's precepts?
I do.
Do you receive Buddha's precepts?
I do.
You have now received Buddha's precepts. You now embody Buddha's precepts. Good. Good, good, good. Usually in an ordination ceremony, the person who is ordained sews a robe, sews a raksu, or sometimes a It's priest ordination. So it's an okesa, big rope. And a special piece of paper called a Ketchum Yaku, a blood, it's called a, I think it's translated as bloodline. It's a lineage line that traces the connection from the original Shakyamuni Buddha through India, through China, through Japan, through Koban Shino Roshi, and finally to Judy, and makes a complete circle and comes back up to Buddha again. Usually that's done for the person. In this instance, it's a little different, and it's actually quite wonderful. A Dharma sister of Judy, Mary K. Spencer, conveyed to Judy her Raksu and her Ketchum Yaku, and said to Judy, "Please take this. Please carry this for me. Please continue this for me." And so what we're doing is, in this instance, we're conveying the Buddha's robe that includes the presence of Mary Kay Spencer, and it's now conveyed to Judy as her personal robe. That was Mary Kay's wish, and definitely, I would say, Koban's wish as well. That this particular robe, one of the first raksus, I think, that he made, a very early one, and for certainly one of the first Ketchum Yakus in America that was made. So with the receiving of Buddha's robe and the paper, the lineage paper, comes a Dharma name. A family name, you could say. And your Dharma name, Judy, is Seibun Jundo. Seibun Jundo. It means, bun is from Koban's name, Kobun. The bun means, it means a word, it means language, it means letters, it means culture, it means the way, like the way things are done, or the way things are manifest. That's bun, and that's an old, through many generations, not just Koban's name, but Koban's brother's name and Koban's father's name, and generations before that has carried this bun. So you're carrying the bun name. Sei means fine or refined. It means very particular. It means meticulous. It means great effort. So it is translated as refined word or refined letters. Seibun. That's your private name. That's your intimate name. And your other name, your more public name, you received from Mary Kay Spencer herself. This was part of her name, and now that was given from Koban, and now the name itself is conveyed to you as well. This is your public name. And I thought it very interesting because it's not very close to Judy. Jundo, very close to Judy, so kind of fits with Judy pretty well. Yeah. Jundo. Jun means pure. It also means straightforward, means one-pointed or on track. That's Jun. And Do means way. It means method. It means truth. It also means practice as well. So, pure way. Refined word. pure way. Sebun Jindo. And this raksu was presented to Coben, was presented from Coben to Mary K. Spencer. And Mary K. intimately conveyed it to Judy, and now formally it becomes your work. So you can be on your knees. Okay. So you can fight. You can chant together. What do you think the date is that this was done? Early
70s?
In the 70s. And finally, what is called the Ketchum Yaku, the lineage paper. This also was done by Coben Chino Roshi, and it now includes. Would you mind if we showed it?
You may.
Thank you. Sometimes this paper is considered quite private, but we're among friends here, so I think you'd all appreciate seeing. One of the first Ketchum Yakus that was done by Coben Chino Roshi in America, and you can see that the circle represents emptiness, shunyata, universality, and the name of Shakyamuni Buddha, and all the ancestors down to Dogen Zenji, and then all the ancestors finally down to
Mary Kay Spencer, the Koban, Chino Roshi, Mary Kay Spencer, and I've added your name, Judy, so you're on this. And then finally, the line goes all the way back up to Buddha, so it becomes one complete circle. And interestingly enough, the person that is newly ordained is the one that's very close to Buddha. And I've asked Jiro and perhaps maybe you as well. On the bottom of this Ketchum Yaku, there's a kind of a poem or some words from Koban. If you would please translate this for Judy. This feels kind of strange because, in a sense, Judy's been a Dharma sister of mine forever, and practiced with Koban before I practiced with Koban, so she should be ordaining me, actually. Would you like to say something?
I will say something. I should turn around.
Would you like, why don't you sit?
Thank you. Well, Michael has certainly conveyed the meaning of this piece of material in an eloquent way. It's humbling, of course. When I think about this Rakusu, it is it represents Koban Chino and it represents Mary Kate Spencer. And one trait of theirs, which I have somewhat not possessed, is that of physical courage. You know, sort of a cowardly lion moment in a way. This is my courage. So let me say a little bit, since when you get to be my age, the thing that looms ahead is facing death. Not that it's imminent, and I don't want to be morbid about this. However, you know, we all have to die, as Koban has said. So each of these people died in a very unique and appropriate way, I think, in a way, for each of them. Coben died in, 2002. Without intention, and without fear, and without self, no hesitation, and no rational explanation. Complete mystery. It really annoyed me when I first heard about it. But it is in many ways very appropriate that Coben died in the way that he did, which was, if anyone doesn't know, that he jumped into a mountain pool, a pool in Switzerland, which we can assume was very cold, because his daughter had jumped in ahead of him. And he would not let her go alone. He was unable to save her, and so therefore unable to save himself. Mary Kate Spencer was in her inner thoughts, was losing her mind. Those of us who knew her were not particularly in agreement with her about that. She, was not unusual for a person of her age, which when she died, she was 89. But nor did she seem sick in any way. But her mother had died in a rest home and had lost her mind by the time she died. Mary Kate was not going to let that happen to her. She was not going to let that happen to her daughter. And she was just not going to let that happen. I mean, and she was the kind of person who used to swim in the ocean by herself. Something which I would never do. So Mary Kate did some investigation and found out that the most legal and permissible way to cause your own death is to stop eating. And this she resolved to do and did. And over a period of weeks, she gradually left her living body with her daughter and son-in-law beside her. And just before she passed away, she said that she was content. She wrote a poem about it. And I do believe that she was happier than she had ever been in her life. Hers was completely intentional. And I think completely appropriate, knowing her. So this prophecy stands for those two events. And, of course, all the things that Michael talked about as well.
Would someone like to say something?
It's a hard act to follow. Thinking of death and its causes, and it's now, I have several friends who are intimately close to death, and I've known you for 40 years, I think, overall, and I hope that I can take some of your courage in considering that to heart.
Awesome. I missed the work 50 years ago, 45 years. Many changes in the past. Seeing you today, you'll be coming home.
Oh, yes.
We exchanged some messages last night, and there was a bit of Mary Kate's Jundal. So it's Judy Jundal. That's a beautiful sound here.
Judy, congratulations. We were touched by this event. And I was very interested to hear what you had to say. I never knew Mary Kay. Nor I knew that she had died, but I didn't know the circumstances. And when I was younger, I worked as a nurse, and I had contact with people who had lost their mind, or sometimes called Alzheimer's disease. And in nursing school, we hadn't studied anything about that, you know? And so I was totally shocked at what could happen. And I decided at that time to do, if I came down with dementia in my old age, which I'm in now, that I too wouldn't wait. And I was very, and I also looked at various options. I looked at various options and stopping eating, although I know it's not an easy thing to do. That's what I decided in my case. If I had to, that's what I would do too. Mm-hmm. And I congratulate you for bringing that up on this occasion. And I agree with you completely that our society is very immature, and we ignore these things until practically it's too late. Mm-hmm. And so I think.
Well, I'll thank you on behalf of Mary Kate. This act of friendship. So beautiful to have received this great gift from a friend. I think maybe I know that I was introduced to Zen practice by a friend who asked me to sit with her. And it was the greatest gift of friendship that I could have received from anyone. And I'm kind of remembering the
Wasn't it Ananda who approached Buddha and said something to the effect of spiritual friendship is, he discovered that spiritual friendship was an important part of the way, and Buddha said, "You're wrong, Ananda. Spiritual friendship is not just an important part of the way, it's the whole way."
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that today, and it's beautiful. I hope this starts a tradition where we pass on our rakshas to our friends.
Congratulations. It's an honor to be here. During the memorial in Sashin, or Koban Roshi, I was struck by how Vanya referred to Koban as our friend and teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He said that numerous times, and I just briefly wanted to bring that up again in the context of these proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
He said it with great joy, I think, as well. But, yeah. As to the physical courage that you mentioned, while I did not meet Koban, that does shine through in the little that I know about him. And perhaps is one of the one of his great legacies and teachings.
I want to say that I am really struck by the rightness of the name translation of refined word in my experience with you. Because when I think about our connection, to me, it is in many ways a series of conversations, many, many words over many years, like overlapping pools.
Mm-hmm.
And going right back to when you started meditating, I remember you talking about Koban and words that Koban said, talking about what they could mean, and about sitting, and many, many, many other words over the years, and then fast forward to when Koban's death, we had conversations about that, what did that mean,
mm-hmm.
many words, many searching for the right word to convey a certain meaning, changing meanings. Mary Kate's choice and her death, again, many connections. We have words around her passage. And in my mind, I have our conversations always there, and sometimes I ask myself, well, what would Mom say about this? Now, and then I'm free to reject or accept any advice that might come into my head. But somehow it's always there as a background for me in a way that helps guide me and ground me. And I know that after you are gone, or not in this body, that those words will be just as strong. Those conversations. be present for me.